What is up, everybody? Thank you for clicking that link and tuning in to the season 2 premiere of the Young and Ambitious podcast. Now, it's been a long time. I'm not even gonna hold you. It's been a long time, and that is my fault, but it took some time to figure out exactly how to do this thing. And look, season 2, we back and we rocking. So I thank you for tuning in. Thank you for all your support. Thank you for your just thank you for everything, man. I definitely appreciate it. If you don't know who I am Courtney, aka Court underscore 2 times, the host of the Young and Ambitious Magazine podcast. Like I said, I thank you for tuning in. Now, this is the season 2 premiere of the podcast. We got a lot to talk about. I got a lot of dope stuff lined up for this season. So just stay tuned. But on today's episode, we are getting serious. This episode is all about what is going on right now, the COVID-19 pandemic, also known as the coronavirus. But before we get into that, like I said, I just want to thank all you guys for listening. Just a couple things before we get into this new episode. Make sure you visit the Young and Ambitious website. We got a lot of stuff up there, a lot of new articles, new shirts. Yes, we got new merch. So make sure you visit the website and order your new shirts. And that's where you can leave your suggestions about what other episodes of the podcast, what topics you want to hear on new episodes of the podcast. So make sure you visit the website. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to. Give us a review. You know, give us a 5-star. We appreciate that. We want 4 stars too, but them 5s is better. And, you know, if you have any topics that you want us to discuss, things you want us to talk about, make sure you let us know. Follow us on Instagram at Young and Ambitious Magazine. You can catch us on Twitter at Young Ambitious and the number 2. I'll make sure all of that is inside of the podcast description box for you. But if you are following us, you'll have access to all information as soon as it becomes available. Now, like I said, today's episode is all about the coronavirus. COVID-19 is what the official term for it is. And I did not know until I started doing a lot of research on the coronavirus that the reason it's called COVID-19, the CO stands for corona, the V stands for virus, the VI stands for virus, the D stands for disease, so coronavirus disease, and then the 19 stands for the year that it was, you know, it came to light, so that's why it's called COVID-19, just a little fun fact for you, but it's been devastating the entire world since beginning of 2020. Here alone in the U.S., we've been on lockdown since early March. I know for me, I'm not working. I haven't been at my 9-to-5 since March 17th, I want to say. March 17th might have been the last day I worked my job. And most places are closed because they're not essential. So, I mean, if you don't provide healthcare services, if your place of business does not sell food or cleaning products or hygiene products, you're not open. There are no gyms, no playgrounds, no schools. A lot of people are not working right now. So, I mean, this thing is just devastating the entire world right now. To date, there have been 2.9 million cases worldwide of people that have been infected with the coronavirus disease. And unfortunately, it's resulted in 206,000 deaths. Those are scary numbers. Unfortunately, they're not dropping right now. They're still going up. Haven't really found a cure for this virus. Haven't found a vaccination for this virus. Right now, the only thing that we can do is stay safe and continue to social distance. I mean, social distancing is a big thing. Making sure you are staying home if you don't have to go to work, if you don't need to go grocery shopping. You know, social distancing is the new normal. And as boring as it can get, I mean, it's not fun. Unless you live in a house full of people, but, you know, it's the safest thing to do right now. So, you know, staying home, Definitely make sure you are wearing some type of mask or covering when you are out in public so you are staying away from other people's germs and keeping yourself somewhat protected. But I mean, honestly, the biggest thing that we can do is stay home and stay safe. Find different ways to entertain yourself. I mean, I know me personally, I've been on TikTok. If y'all ain't on TikTok, join the wave, because, you know, TikTok is definitely fun. A lot of people are creating YouTube channels. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do to keep ourselves active, to keep ourselves entertained, and making sure that we are at home and staying safe. But, you know, if you need more information, you need more ideas of things that you can do while you're at home, visit the website. We do have an article on 8 ways that you can stay busy and entertained while you are quarantined. But back to this episode, I'm interviewing one of my best friends today. She is an essential worker. We both live up here in Western New York. And she is actually a survivor. She survived coronavirus. She had the coronavirus and she is officially out of the clear. So stay tuned for that interview. We're going to chat it up with her. She's going to talk about what she went through, how she found out she had the virus, the recovery process, and, you know, just so much more. So make sure you stay tuned. All right. So my first guest on this episode of the podcast is a friend of mine. Her name is Tiffany. Don't worry, we are social distancing. I am at my own house, and hopefully she is at her own house as well. But the reason I'm interviewing Tiffany today is, number one, when I first thought about interviewing her, I wanted to interview her, talk to her about her perspective of what's going on with the coronavirus, as she is considered an essential worker. But further on into what was going on with the coronavirus, you were actually diagnosed with the coronavirus, correct?
An unofficial diagnosis, yes.
What is an unofficial diagnosis?
So the standards for people who can be tested are very strict. You either have to be so far off in the zone of the worst that you have to be admitted to the hospital, or you have to 100% come in direct contact or live with someone who has been diagnosed.
Okay, so go ahead.
I went back and forth to the hospital, but was not able to get tested until a couple days ago.
Okay. So, like, what symptoms were you having that made you think, oh, snap, I may have coronavirus?
This started a while ago, actually. My chest just kept hurting. I couldn't breathe. I was just in constant pain. I would literally sit up to move in bed and be dry heaving and like trying to catch my breath for 3 or 4 minutes, which was like, all right, that's kind of extreme. And I just didn't get better. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. My face was always hot. I always felt like I had a fever. I know people keep comparing it to the flu, but it's more severe. But it really just feels like you have the flu and can't break it. And after a while, I just said, I got to do something. I just went back and forth to the doctors, to the ER, phone calls, video conferences, but I wasn't getting the response that I was hoping for.
I think it's like very strange. I mean, obviously, you know, we keep hearing in the news that, you know, they don't have enough testing kits to test everybody that thinks they have the virus. But it's like when you have certain symptoms, you would think that they would, you know, test those people, even if they can't get them to the hospital. Especially, I would say someone in your case, like I said, you are an essential worker, but you also live with other people. And just for the sake of like security for those other people, you would think that they would want to, you know, test you to make sure that you didn't have it or to confirm that you had it, so that you didn't potentially pass it on to people that you worked with or people that you came in contact with at work or even the people that you lived with.
I agree. And I also think that with my medical background and it being so testy, for me to be not frontline as in first responders or nurses, but to be in a restaurant where multiple people are coming in and out every single day, and most of those being delivery drivers who are then being in contact with hundreds of other people every single day, the standards and the regulations definitely have to be adjusted as this continues.
You kind of jumped the gun there, because I was going to later
talk to you about your previous health history. But since you brought it up, let's talk about that. So you are, and this is one of the other reasons why I kind of didn't understand why you weren't already tested when you first started having symptoms, because you are a person that is considered, what is it, immune deficient, correct?
Yeah, immunocompromised or immune deficient.
So like what is it that considers you to be immune deficient?
So my official medical diagnosis is mixed connective tissue disease, which is lupus, scleroderma, and dermatomyositis. And lupus is the one I most often call it, or label it as, because that's the one more people know of.
Yeah, because I don't know what the other two words you just said were.
A lot of people don't. I have a lot of doctors who don't even know. But for the lupus aspect of it, your immune system, your healthy cells fight the rest of your body. So it misinterprets things. So I could get a simple cold and it'll go into fight or flight mode as if I have the worst infection in the world. So because of that, my white blood cell count is very low, which is something you often hear with people who have different types of cancers who also are completely immunodeficient. So it's just harder for me to fight off things. I get sick way longer than I should, and it just makes things like this very concerning and very scary.
So, like I said, like you would think with you having those diagnoses that like you would have been tested immediately, because you basically you could have contracted the COVID-19 virus the first time you came into contact with somebody.
Oh, absolutely. And again, working at a restaurant and working at one of the highest breweries in the city, we see hundreds of people a day. And on weekends, I mean, our capacity was at about 500, but and to be completely honest, like I probably came in contact with on an 8-hour shift, at least 1,000 people or so. So people coming in from vacations, cruises, anywhere. I mean, it came to a point where I was getting frustrated because they kept saying, well, you're not high enough on the standards list yet. Like, well, what are y'all not understanding? I'm coming in contact with people and I don't know where they've been, what they've done, who they've been in contact with. And I'm prone to this stuff. So we probably should be doing something about it.
I think that's one of the scariest parts of this virus. There are the symptoms of the virus. They say test for like make sure you don't have a fever. What are some of the other? I'm drawing a blank. Like some of the other symptoms of the virus are,
Loss of taste, which is a weird one.
loss of taste, loss of smell. The fever, coughing, things like that. But there's also people that could have be a carrier for the virus, basically meaning, they don't actually have the virus, but the virus is like in them, so they could pass it on to somebody. And it's like if you're coming in contact with a person that doesn't know they have the virus, they have just spread it on to God knows how many people. And that alone is a scary thought. And I think that is why it is very important that people continue to practice social distancing and pretty much stay in the house.
Yeah, it's boring. It's you go stir crazy. It's aggravating, but in the long run, I'd rather sit here and be bored and eat too many snacks than to unwillingly kill people that I had no idea I was infecting.
Right. So you talked about being a restaurant worker. So what was it like? So like you don't work in a restaurant like a McDonald's, like where there's just a drive-through window or a counter service or whatever. You actually work in an actual restaurant slash brewery where people come in. You're the first point of contact, basically. You greet the people at the door, you give them their menus, you direct them to their seats, you help out with cashing out people, yada yada yada. So what was it like when the social distancing order happened here in New York and people weren't actually able to come into the restaurant because restaurants were shut down for dine-in services?
It was definitely a little bit of culture shock. From the time we got the first cut your capacity in half order to fully strictly takeout was probably, I want to say, 2 or 3 days, I think. Sorry, one order was on a Friday, and then by Monday it was by 8 o'clock, all restaurants are doing strictly takeout. So it was a little weird, and it was definitely overwhelming from going from 30 employees helping out to maybe four
That's insane.
If anyone is ordering or, you know, accessing takeout from local restaurants, have all the patience in the world with these people, because it is nothing like what we envisioned it being. Like, we can have a plan one day of how beautifully this will work, but when it gets down to it and that dinner rush comes in, which, yes, we still have a dinner rush, because you have to remember there are a handful of people who are still deemed essential workers. So they're still going to work. And when they leave, they've got kids at home. They got a family. They got to get a bunch of food. So that dinner rush at 6 o'clock from 5:30 to like 7:30, it's just, there was several times I just sat in my car in silence and was like almost crying, because I just could not imagine going home, going to sleep, and then coming back to do this again.
Especially, it's like, you do have, there's a lot of people, don't mean to cut you off, but there's also a lot of people who don't actually cook.
Yeah.
So it's like they depend on, you know, other restaurants and food, you know, being able to go out and order something versus actually, you know, being in the house and cooking for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So a restaurant is, you know, one of those places that's going to continue to be busy even during this social distancing time.
We're definitely from my restaurant with our lovely selection of craft beers. I mean, we definitely had more than the regular amount of takeout orders. Like, even on a regular weekend, like, we sell a lot of food, but a heck of a lot of beer. And this, around this time, we're releasing a new beer or two every Friday. So it's definitely helping. And people are definitely taking advantage of the offers of half price growlers and crawlers.
So what were the customers like when they were coming to the restaurant? Like, did you experience like impatient people, or, you know, people that expressed, you know, gratitude for the fact that you guys were still open? Like, what was the kind of demeanor of the customers?
It was both, but it was a very strong push to gratitude. We did have some who were impatient, or they demanded curbside pickup, which I understand because everyone's afraid to come in contact with people. But the only warning I had to give people when I was doing curbside orders was, you have to call when you come in or call when you pull up. The back seat or the trunk has to be open for us, and you're gonna have to be a little patient because I'm doing a lot of things by myself. So it could be easily 15 or 20 minutes until I have just a break in this pandemonium to get out there and get to you. And more often than not, people are like, okay, no problem. And then I would see them standing in front of me because they'd be like, I saw how busy it was. You look like you're, you know, really about to lose it. So I just decided to come in to get my food. And a lot of people are super, super nice around this time because they understand everything, and they are tipping better than I've ever seen in my entire life.
Now, so I work at, well, you know, but, you know, listeners don't know, but I work in retail. So, you know, my job, we were shut down pretty early on, because, you know, obviously we're deemed non-essential. But for those people that do still have to get up and go to work, not even just the hospital workers, you know, the first responders, but people like you that work in grocery stores, that work in restaurants, or the people that work at grocery stores or gas stations, it's kind of crazy to think of a restaurant or a grocery store or a gas station, or, you know, those type of workers being essential and having to go to work every single day, not just the doctors and the nurses that are working in the hospitals are responding to the calls.
I think this is a great reminder for people that a degree does not make you better than anyone. Yes, our hospital workers are amazing and I can never do what they did, but you need to remember this point when this is all over, that these restaurant workers, these grocery workers, they contributed to your daily life, which was going on.
Right. In a way that you never even thought possible. Like, I mean, like, we really can't do much of anything other than, you know, sit in the house or, you know, go outside for a walk. But it's like, who would have thought that getting up and going to the grocery store was an outing? Like, you look forward to it because it's like, that's the only place, it's the only place you can go right now where you're not going to get in trouble for actually being there. So like I mentioned, we live in New York. So, you know, our stay at home order has pretty much been in place, I think, since March 5th, I want to say March 17th. I think it was like March 17th. We've pretty much been in a stay at home order. So that's like, I think that's going on 6 weeks now. For how long of that 6 weeks were you working?
So we closed down March 17th to get everything in order and figure everything out, which included, unfortunately, a lot of layoffs. And we opened back up March 18th. And then I called it quits on April 5th, April 4th or 5th. Okay. Whatever one of Saturday was.
So about 2 weeks ago, yeah. Pretty much.
I just voiced to my manager, like I was saying it for those 2.5 weeks that I was working, like I would just keep saying, you know, I'm not really comfortable. I'm just getting nervous because I have this chest pain that I can't shake and I don't know what's going on. And you just kept saying, when you're ready, we'll let you go. And then something happened that like last Monday or something. And I was like, I'm 100% not comfortable. And I think this needs to be my last week working. And he was like, okay. And then walked away. And a couple hours later, he came back over. I was like, so Saturday's going to be your last day. He's like, I don't like how panicked you're getting. And I'd rather you just sit at home and heal so I don't have to worry about you, because I do know your immune system's a little bit different. And he's like, I'll figure it out. We just need to make a how-to guide of everything you do before you leave. And you can come back when you're ready.
So when do you think you'll be returning to work? I mean, nothing has officially opened back up here in New York. We honestly don't know when things will open because Governor Cuomo just extended our stay-at-home order until May 15th. But, excuse me, even past May 15th, do you think you'll go back to work right away, or you'll still stay out until this kind of clears up a little bit more?
I've been thinking about that for a couple of days because obviously, not obviously, in my opinion, this isn't it. Even if by May 15th, if the curve is completely gone, I do believe there's a round two that might be coming. So I'm going to have to make that decision and talk to my employer about that as well, because if there's some way I can stay on like a layoff position until we're open for a couple weeks and we don't see a horrid spike in these cases, then I will be comfortable going back. Because if I go back when, you know, everything reopens and then in 3 days I'm back at square one of being sick or worse, like I'm not sure my immune system could retake a hit. Like it got through it the first time, right? But who's to say that we don't know the long-term effects yet. So there could be things inside that are not working as they're supposed to be. And I just don't know it yet.
Right. So you posted something on, I think it was Snapchat earlier. So you might've posted on all social medias. I don't remember. It was like basically saying that you survived COVID-19. So are you officially out the clear or?
Yes. So I got tested on Sunday. Here in Western New York, Quest was doing a drive-through testing thing. And I went online, filled out the little questionnaire, and it was like, you definitely qualify for testing. And I went Sunday morning, did the not so comfortable nasal swab. And
yeah, first of all, before you continue, let's talk about that, because a lot of people, like, they show like what it looks like on the news, and a lot of people are like, oh my God, I would never get that. So what was that like?
I have a very high pain tolerance, so I don't want to diminish anyone else's feelings about this, but it is also not the worst thing in the world. It doesn't hurt like, oh my gosh, this is awful. It just burns. It's an awkward burn, and your eyes water because obviously you're sticking a pseudo Q-tip into your nasal passage. Like, it goes pretty far up. I want to say it goes at least 2 inches up your nose, and you have to hold it there and like turn it back and forth, and it has to be in each, the way I did it for my testing, each nostril for 15 seconds.
Honestly, it doesn't, I was talking to my uncle about this and he was like, I would never, that, oh no, I can't do it, blah blah blah. Mind you, my uncle is like 6'5", like 300 something pounds. Like, this huge grown man is saying that he wouldn't be able to take it. Like, he was getting squeamish talking about it. But I actually had, you know, but I had a nasal surgery a couple years ago. And I still have to go back for checkups with my surgeon and with my ENT, which is a ears, nose, and throat doctor, every 3 to 6 months. They do that to me every time I go to the doctor. But for me, either they do it twice. There's a camera on one of the probes that they use that they stick all the way up my nose, and they actually go into my sinuses, my sinus cavities with it. And then they also go in there with the vacuum, because part of the reason I had the nasal surgery was because my sinuses overactively produce mucus, which causes like a lot of bacteria growth. I know, kind of TMI, but it causes a lot of bacteria growth, which caused me to like pretty much have a sinus infection for like 8 months. Yeah. It was like 8 months straight I had a sinus infection until they were able to figure out what was wrong. So it was like, when they do that to me, there's a vacuum on the other end of that that they use to like suck all of the snot out of my neck. So gross saying that out loud, but that's what they do. So like, I know how that feels. But the thing is, when I go, they actually give me like a numbing spray in my nose. That does not work. It doesn't work. It still makes it uncomfortable. Like when they go that far up in your nose, your eyes start watering, and then it's like you want to cough, but you don't want to move because you're scared that the other end of whatever they just stuck up your nose is going to come out your ear or something. Like, it's a lot of people are talking about how, you know, uncomfortable the testing process was.
I've seen grown women post who have babies that they would never do it. I'm just like, you're not thinking this through. Like, it's not as bad. The pictures will always look worse than it actually is.
It's like it's a moment. It's a moment of pain. Like, you know, if this is life threatening, that then you really don't have to know. You can survive this little bit. So back to you actually dealing with coronavirus. Like, while it was a undiagnosed state, what was your treatment plan like? Did they give you anything for it? Did they tell you like what to do, different things to like keep yourself healthy or make this kind of go by faster?
Okay, well, you know, I got the paper from the ER. I went back for my second or third visit, and the doctor was just like, I'm going to be completely honest with you. Without testing you, you have it. You're hitting every single marker. I know you have it. I just can't admit you to test you because we waited too long, and I think you're over the worst of it. She's like, when you couldn't breathe and your chest was hurting all last week to the point where you were scared to even cough or breathe, that's when we should have tested you. But she gave me the lovely paper and just said, Tylenol, do not take any type of ibuprofen or Motrin because that feeds it. Isolate yourself as much as you can. Don't use any, if you have a bathroom that you can use and it's just yours, do that. And hydrate and sleep as much as you can. She's like, you're probably not going to be able to sleep because this is scary, but as much as you can, just rest and you'll be fine. If anything changes, if your fever, they were very, very adamant about this. If your fever hits, what was it? I want to say it was 102. If your fever hits 102 or higher, come back immediately. If you can't breathe, come back immediately. Don't even question it. Don't overthink it. Don't give your fever time to go down. Just come back and we'll go from there. Because with your immune system, I'm afraid that if we wait too long,
I mean, like, you don't want to risk anything like that.
Which she knew me. I'm kind of on a first name basis with some of the doctors in the ER because I'm there so often. And she was like, I know you're going to like try to wait and see if you can get your fever down with, you know, Tylenol and a shower. She was like, don't even do it. Just come right back. So I told
her. Yeah, this is definitely nothing that you want to play around with. No, and I got that report
from her and then my rheumatologist as well. Like, I emailed her and she was like, yeah, we're not going to play this game. I know you. You're going to try to wait everything out. She's like, as soon as something gets bad, please call me, call the ER, go. Like, you can't just wait around because this can end very badly. It's like, all right, I'll do what I'm told this time and I'll go to the hospital.
No, I just want you guys to make notice that she said this time, because Tiffany is extremely hard-headed when it comes to listening to her doctors. That's why she said she'll listen this time. when this is all said and done and you do return to work, you know, based on like what you do at your job now, do you think things will change like with your job response, not because of your health, but people in your field in particular, do you think things will change with how the job is done? The way people interact with other customers and think, like, how do you think things will change or be different when this is all said and done?
There are some things that are going to drastically change. If everyone remembers, this is quite entertaining to me. Before this happened, we had a ban on plastic bags, and because, you know, we were trying to cut down on waste and everything. And And now that's all we use everywhere is plastic bags because we just can't keep up with the demand for paper. So I definitely.
And then they're also, you know, like the whole with getting rid of plastic bags, the push was to bring back, bring reusable bags. But I know a lot of places aren't allowing you to bring your reusable bags because they don't want the workers to have to basically touch stuff that came from outside that, you know, hasn't been cleaned or hasn't been sanitized.
But I definitely think in terms of restaurants, you might see, at least for a while, if not permanently, and I can't say permanently because financially it's not a smart decision, but paper menus or
disposable menus.
Definitely a higher standard for cleaning menus in between, not just menus, but everything in between each customer's use, which it's doable, but it's definitely going to be stressful because if you've ever been in a restaurant or if you ever worked in a restaurant, you know that there could be 900 open clean tables and there's always going to be that one guest who wants to sit at the one dirty table and like demands it. So it's going to be an offering.
I know like one of my first jobs, I worked at McDonald's and we had a play place. The kids activity thing for, you know, people that don't know what the play place was because they never experienced it. So our location, like we had a slide, you know, we had like little, we had several slides, I think. We had, you know, you had to climb up into the play place to get down the slide. We had like games, like mini arcade games that people could play, you know, that they send their kids to and stuff. We did birthday parties at our location. And it was like, you know, McDonald's is open 7 days a week. The lobby is open, I want to say, from like 7-8 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night at most locations. So like when you have a play place, there's countless number of kids that go into a play place, and kids are some of the most germiest people ever because, you know, they sneeze and don't cover their mouth, you know, they slob in their hands or whatever. But I remember we only cleaned and sanitized our play place once a week. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not even gonna lie, most of the time the people that cleaned it, they BS'd it because there's no way that one person would have been able to clean that entire play place. You know, they wanted it to be done like, you know, quick, fast, and in a hurry. They wanted it done like within 20, 30 minutes. But in all the places that people touch, there's absolutely no way that you can clean that and keep up with it so it's, you know, completely sanitized. So, you know, like you said, that's definitely going to be a big change. And it's almost crazy that something like this had to happen for people to make cleanliness a priority.
I'm also a little nervous because my job is a restaurant and we have two bars and three bars as well. And if you've ever been in a bar, you know there's no type of personal space at all. So I'm just
right.
And when alcohol gets mixed into the mix, it gets a little hostile. So when we do open back up, people are still going to be a little high strung, and it's just going to take one person to be too close to someone when they cough or sneeze to have an entire all out brawl go
blow up. Right. What do you think life is going to be like afterwards? Like, do you think we'll still see, you know, concerts or, you know, be able to go to football or basketball games?
Well, this is the Bills like Super Bowl year, so we have to have football. And
let's go Buffalo.
I feel like as much as we want everything to happen, 2020 might be a bust and we might have to wait until 2021 for a lot of things to fully return to normal.
Right. Do you think, especially with your immune system, do you think you'll be cautious about going to into a large crowd or, you know, into public places?
Yes and no. Yes, because obviously I don't want the worst to happen because we all know it can happen. That was another scary part about this was picking up my phone every day and seeing news articles of this many people died last night and this many new cases. It was just like, I'm trying to like not freak out, but at the same time, I have to take into account that this is very real and it can happen. But in terms of going back out into society and assimilating myself in there, I'm going to be cautious. I already was kind of cautious. It just pumped it up a little bit in terms of remembering not to touch my face, which apparently is one of my favorite things to do. And
I don't think people realize how many times they actually like touch their face, and but you do it inadvertently. Like, if your eyebrow itches, you're not gonna say, "Whoops, let me go wash my hands before I scratch my eyebrow." You know, your eyebrow itches, you just instinctively put
Yeah,
your hand
even
up and
just like
scratch your
leaning
eyebrow.
on something. Like I'm literally leaning on my leg right now with my hand on my face. It's just like, where am I supposed to put it? Like I have to, my head's big. I have to have something to hold it up.
Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't think I'm going to be particularly, worried about going into life, because it's just like this is the only life that we've ever known. So it's like, it's just the thought of like, yo, am I going to be comfortable never
Oh,
going to
I
a concert
know.
again? Or it's like, am I never going to go to an NBA or a WNBA or a football game ever again because of this? Like, this is just unprecedented. So we honestly, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what to expect in the future. We just kind of have to basically, take it as it is and just determine if we're going to continue, life like we did, or, decide to live in a bubble for the
Which,
rest of our
as a sick
life.
person, I have the luxury of saying that I'm sick, but I'm not over, I don't want to say overly concerned because I feel like that's rude, but I'm not in that level of concern where I think I need to live in a bubble. I fought it off this time, knock on wood, and I would hope that it either doesn't come back or that I can't fight it off another time. I just will be cautious about how close I am to some people when I can control it. Obviously, in a place like a concert
Right.
or a football game or even just going to the beach, like there's certain levels of comfortability you can achieve, and then there's other times that you just have to either decide to not enjoy your time and just isolate yourself in your own car.
But also, it's like, thinking you can't always think the worst is going to happen, because that's just going to take a terrible mental strain on you as well. So it's like you kind of just have to,
Which you know.
go with the flow. Just kind of go with the flow and, figure it out on your own. I mean, I wouldn't say, attend every football game, every basketball game, every, go stand in crowds all the time. But, every once in a while, it's okay to, go out and experience something after this. I think, the scariest part is over. We just kind of have to, see where it
Oh,
goes from here.
absolutely. It's just taking it day by day. We live life that way anyway, so just see what you can do, see what you can't do. I mean, I'm more concerned of not, sporting events and concerts. I'm more concerned with kids going back to school because those little kids are packed in like sardines. Have you ever been in a kindergarten class? These kids are literally on top of each other every second of the day.
And little kids have no
No,
understanding of
and
personal space
like you
at
said, they
all.
sneeze
They
and cough.
like to
Like,
touch
I
you,
didn't know
period.
until I worked in a daycare that they literally will wait until you open your mouth to sneeze or cough, like directly in your face. Like, that's more what I'm concerned about is, like, I have a 15-year-old brother, so obviously there's a horrible level of cross-contamination just because he's in high school. He's touching railings, he's touching the
Right.
lunchroom tables, he's touching doors. Like, that's more of my concern, not being around a bunch of other adults who, just are having a good time. So it's definitely going to be a balance of taking it every one day at a time and figuring out what we can and can't do. If we don't see a horde spike in things, I feel like we can all breathe easier. We just
Right.
stay home for now. Like, you can stay home. It's not going to be the end of the world.
A couple more questions, because we're kind of running very long. I didn't know it was going to take this long. But back to the virus. Since now that you've had it, you've gotten over it, do doctors know if you could actually get the virus again? Or, once you, is it like the chicken pox? Once you have it, it's like a 1% chance that you'll actually
I've
contract
seen
it
both.
again.
I've seen some say once you get it, you should be good. But then I also seen reports from China where hundreds of people who were diagnosed and cleared and recovered now have it again. So I think it's once again
Right.
one of those things that we don't know for certain and we just have to wait and see. So for now, they're just telling me be cautious.
And part of just being cautious right now is pretty much staying in the
Yeah,
house because
as
everything's
much as
closed.
I don't want to.
So I well, obviously you know, for the for the majority of the time that you were home, you were sick because you had the virus, so you pretty much didn't do anything. But now that you're kind of over the virus, you're in the clear, you won't, you know, be so drained all the time. What are you going to be doing to, you know, pretty much occupy your time while you're at
I've
home?
decided to, when the weather reaches a point of, consistency, start taking some walks around the blocks, go rollerblading. I've become a snack person overnight, and I'm trying to like not start bad habits. And then we've done a couple of DIY projects around my house, which I'm super proud about. So we tackled one. We still have to do like the basement and the garage, and both of those are big enough where it's going to take, more than a couple of days. So I'm just trying to put my mind into positive things. I also suffer from mental health issues, so I know if I sit down too long, it can take a negative turn.
All right. Well, I thank you for joining me today on the podcast. I'm also glad that you have successfully beat the COVID-19 because, guys, Tiffany is like one of my closest friends. So I'm glad that she is going to be back healthy and okay. And yeah,
Thanks
thank
for
you for
having me. This
joining
was
us
fun.
today. I know we talked for like a whole 36 minutes. Like I think when I text you and asked you, did you want to do this? I said, oh, it'll take 5 to 10 minutes. I
Okay,
lied,
we'll check that for
clearly.
next time. We'll get down to, a respectable time.
right. So, all right. Thank you once again. And I will chat with you later. And guys, stay tuned for the next
Bye.
part of the
Like I said, this is a season two premiere of the Young and Ambitious Magazine podcast, and we're bringing a whole lot of new flavor to the show. Something that I'm going to start doing weekly is my Young and Ambitious shout out. This is going to be somebody who I feel that needs to be shouted out and show some appreciation for what they are doing. This week's shout out is going to no other than Mr. Sheldon Gibbs. Sheldon is a teen entrepreneur, and he is the founder of Classic Knot. Classic Knot, that's what it's called. Classic Knot. Now, Classic Knot is losing my train of thought, y'all. Classic Knot, yeah, it's a handcrafted line of bow ties. Now, these are gonna be some of the flyest bow ties you'll see around. Sheldon actually, makes them himself. I'm not shouting him out because of his young entrepreneurial status, but what he has been doing during this pandemic and how he has been using his business to help people. Sheldon, like I said, his brand is all about making handcrafted bow ties. But during coronavirus pandemic, he has switched from the bow ties to making masks for people to wear out in public. In a lot of states, I know right here in New York, it is required that if you go out in public, go to the grocery store, gas station, wherever, you are required to have a mask. They prefer you to have the N95 or the surgical mask. Those are the medical grade masks that's going to prevent you from getting the virus. But a lot of people can't have access to those because you can't find them anywhere. Everybody is buying them and they're hoarding them. So Sheldon started making masks, fabric masks, for people to wear out in public. Now, they are dope. I personally order 7. Yep, I got 7. They're not all for me, though. I ordered 7. I got one for me. I got one for my parents. I got one for my brother. And I also got one for my grandparents. So, make sure that they're protected. But Sheldon is doing a great service to the people of Western New York and whoever else is ordering masks. So he began selling them on his Facebook page, just customers. And I'm not sure right now if he's still selling them. But you definitely can check out his social media and hit him up if you have more information. Follow Sheldon at classicknot.com. That's his website, www.classicknot.com. And you can also hit him up on Instagram at classic_knot. That's KNOT, like the knot on a bow tie. At classic_knot, and his website is www.classicknot.com. I'm going to make sure all that information is in the description box below. But like I said, check it out. And yo, Sheldon, we salute you for what you are doing for the people. Oh. Thank you all for tuning in to the season 2 premiere of the Young and Ambitious Magazine podcast. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. I enjoy interviewing my friend, man. Most of the time when I interview people, whether it's for the magazine or for the podcast, I don't get a chance to talk to people that I'm like super close to. And it's definitely fun to, you know, be able to talk to a friend in this type of atmosphere where we're not having a regular conversation, but, you know, we're still talking to each other. And I enjoyed it. So I hope you guys enjoyed it too. Next week, I'll be chatting it up with another friend of mine who, you know, also has been personally affected by the coronavirus. Not because he contracted the virus, but, you know, you'll find out. So make sure you stay tuned in next week. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you liked what you heard today, make sure you leave us a review. If you want to hear something else from us, if you got an idea of a topic that you want us to discuss, or you want me to talk to one of your friends who has a business or, you know, is living a young and ambitious life, make sure you hit me up on my Instagram @court_2x. Or make sure you let me know, hit the DMs on the Young and Ambitious Magazine Instagram. And, you know, tell me who you want to see featured on the podcast or, you know, what topics you think we should talk about. Now, in the midst of all that is going on with the coronavirus, I urge everyone to stay home, stay safe, and stay healthy. If you need some ideas of things to keep you busy during the quarantine, like I said, visit our website at www.theyoungandambitious.com. I have a list of 8 ways that you can stay entertained and busy while you are at home during quarantine. If you have been going out and you think you may be sick, remember to contact your doctor if you are exhibiting any symptoms. Symptoms for the coronavirus, they are fever, difficulty breathing, loss of taste or smell. Some people also have chest pain. If you have anything like that, make sure you call your doctor or your healthcare provider and, you know, get a checkup, because we don't want anybody else getting sick. We need these numbers to go down so we can get back to life as it used to be. Like I said, make sure you follow Young and Ambitious, the brand, on Facebook at Young and Ambitious Magazine. You can hit us up on Instagram at Young and Ambitious Magazine. You can find us on Twitter, not at Young and Ambitious Magazine, but it's Young Ambitious, the number 2. And like I said, check out our website at www.theyoungandambitious.com. If you want to follow me, Court2x, you can find me everywhere. Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all of that at Court_2x. Court_2, the word times. I'm going to leave all this information down below in the description box. And, you know, thank you for tuning in to another episode. See you next week. Peace out.